Future presentation.
Welcome back to another Untitled Movie Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Rohrbeck, alongside he's allergic to tomatoes, but is he actually a robot, Eric Marchin?
Hey, you.
Put your face 3 centimeters from the camera to establish love link. Today we are reviewing Drew Hancock. No relation to my friend Ryan Hancock, I think. Drew Hancock's companion, starring.
He also Sophie loves being in hot tubs.
Yeah, that's a weird pull. Starring Sophie Thatcher, Jack Quaid, Luke Gage, and more. Rupert Friend, and more. Eric, how you doing?
Good, good. I'm at this point in January where it's like I'm very excited for the month to end just because of what's going on in the world as a whole right now.
Sure.
But also it's nice when, you know, you're looking forward to something. You're looking forward to a new year. We have a brand new episode of the show up right now that is our most anticipated films list, but we also look back at 2024, basically almost 6 hours worth of content or recordings there.
Ridiculous.
We're longer than the Brutalist.
We broke Adobe Podcast twice.
And so, you know, those gave me like this little bit of energy and enthusiasm to continue forth. And I was looking forward to watching this movie because the ads have been very forthright and prominent with the fact that the producers of Barbarian are behind this. And Zach
and
Krieger,
Notebook, right?
Yes. And the
studio,
Notebook.
Sorry.
The studio. Yes. Behind. Yes. Yeah. But Zach Krieger is a producer on this film and recently has started a bidding war for his Resident Evil movie. And watching Companion with you, you know, my companion, at least podcasting wise, is, and friend wise, is also always a joy. You know, like this was our first, I think, screening
of
together.
The year, yeah.
But does it compute, Matt? Does it
yeah.
make that love link that we needed?
Yeah. I'd say I was equally, it kind of crept up on me. But I loved Barbarian just like you did. I'm very excited for Zach Krieger's, Weapons and his new Resident Evil film. That is, might end up at Warner Brothers. Actually, they were one of the two studios that they, that were mentioned in that rumor and article. It was them and Netflix. I really hope it goes theatrical and doesn't end up on Netflix or something like that.
Like the Resident Evil live action show with Lance.
Yeah. Ritter. Yeah. And yeah. You'd think Sony would be in there because PlayStation Productions seemed to be a co-producer. Resident Evil, not owned by Sony, but was a big PlayStation game back in the day. Now it's on everything and things like that. But we don't have to talk about Resident Evil. We're here to talk about Drew Hancock's Companion. Yeah, I'd say I was equally like looking forward to this. I think I like the cast. I think, you know, I've always said Jack Quaid up there in top tier Nepo babies, and Sophie Thatcher I've liked, especially even in some recent horror stuff like Heretic and I liked her. She's also, is it Yellow Jacket? She's in
Yellow
Jackets. Well?
Yeah.
She's great in the first season of Yellow Jackets. So yeah, I was looking forward to this. I'd say, you know, first screening of the year, it was exciting to get back out there. And just getting like a fun horror movie in January is always nice. And when, especially when January also, we've already mentioned this in our, actually you can go check out our Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man review, kind of a dead zone, right? Usually a dumping ground, usually not much going on. But we got both Wolfman and Companion. Wolfman mixed to negative reviews, didn't really work for most people. And I'd say Companion, if you're looking for just that fun Friday night horror thriller,
a date night movie, if like, you will.
Yeah, a perfect date night movie. I think you'll be satisfied. I don't think it's amazing. I don't think it's doing anything we haven't seen in a long list of movies about, you know, that kind of romantic comedy horror kind of thing, or movies about AI or robots, and that we've seen in things like Ex Machina and Her, Terminator, other things too. You could list a bunch of movies about AI robots, and this,
well, especially recently, right? And when we say recently, like Ex Machina was 11 years ago, and Ex Machina still feels very fresh when it comes to how fresh as well, when it comes to AI, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, even not even just like the concept or the exploration of AI autonomy, which is a part of this story, but also isolation, right? And a secluded location, you know, that is basically not funded by a brilliant individual, but, you know, a billionaire or someone that is very rich has this idyllic kind of cottage lake house getaway where the main characters are sequestered for the entirety of the film, with the exception of flashbacks embedded in the movie. And so, like, even that, in terms of that presentation, or, you know, we just joked about the Sebastian Stan movie Fresh, where the meet cute in the opening bit of this feels very almost directly lifted, to the point where they meet in the produce section. But then there's that other film. I don't know if
you whole nice guy turned psychopath kind of thing.
Yes. Too. Yes. Yeah. 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 Or, you know, in this case, it feels like it's trying to make a point about like incel culture and, you know, turning Jack Quaid's character almost into like a bit of a stooge at times, which is great. I think like he's fully, you know, invested in it and, you know, is committed to the bit. But do you remember that other movie that came out like right after Ex Machina that no one talks about, and it's not very good, but it had an amazing cast with Anya Taylor-Joy in the lead, Morgan, with Michelle Yeoh and Paul Giamatti. Yeah, yeah. That's another one of these movies that's very similar in terms of its...
Not to be confused with Megan Morgan.
Megan Morgan, Ex Machina, Terminator. Like, if you've seen all of these Westworld movies... You're basically getting a pastiche within this story. Now, there are moments that I think are funny, that work. Sophie Thatcher's performance in particular, like, I think if the film didn't have her, it would probably short circuit. And you mentioned Heretic, you know, she's in Boogeyman. She has a very small cameo in Maxine. She's kind of becoming this new Scream queen. Though, like, it's, I don't know if that's now considered derogatory or not, but
it's non-derogatory how we're
using it, but she is like it, just in terms of like expressions and feelings, and we should also say, like, if you want to see this movie as fresh as humanly possible, don't listen to this, you know, try to avoid the marketing if you haven't seen the marketing already. I know that can be really difficult, but I think the marketing does ruin an aspect of the surprise in which the characters already know or self-aware that Sophie Thatcher's Iris is a robot, but she doesn't know. And that's almost like the twist in the first act, where everyone else knows, but she doesn't. And usually in these types of stories, everyone else doesn't know that someone's a robot. You know, like, there's like that feeling of like, okay, like The Thing, people don't know who The Thing is, but the person who knows that they're The Thing.
But in this universe, it's very normal that people, well, not normal, but maybe like people know people own robots like this, right?
Yes. But you're presented with the fact that you don't know up until the end of the first act. And so knowing that through the marketing material and the, you know, the conversations that are going to be, this is going to be spoiler free, by the way, for people listening.
Other than that, watching, which they have shown in the trailers, that's what's hard about this. Cause I do think the movie might play better if you knew nothing, like if they played it as a straight kind of like Fresh, where it was just a romantic comedy turned horror movie, but you didn't know the twist, and the movie plays it out like you wouldn't know the twist, but the marketing has given away. There's other twists throughout the entire movie constantly, but
and that's the problem with it as well. And that also feels like, I don't know if it's subsequent to Barbarian or if the script was something that was written before, but it always feels like it is trying too hard to continually pull the rug from under you with each and every twist to be you know, outsmarting the audience, and the audience will either be exhausted by the continual, you know, twists and turns that the film does take to the point where they just won't care anymore. I think I got to a point where it's like, okay, like we're introducing another, you know, caveat in the plot, and it's going to, you know, set the trajectory into a different order, or we're going to add a new hurdle to things. And it just, it gets to the point where it's exhausting rather than exciting. And when you're watching that, like you're just basically predicting like, okay, when's the next twist coming? In the same way that I think what happened to M. Night Shyamalan throughout, you know, his career after Signs, where he became the twist guy. So people going into the movies weren't enjoying the films, you know, on a level of just like purely going with it. Like they were trying to anticipate or outguess or outsmart what was going to happen. And then the movie itself is also trying to do that. So there's this weird sort of, you know, combative relationship that the film has with the audience and vice versa, that you just feel like you're watching and it's like, okay, maybe this movie thinks it's more clever than it actually is. And then also like the audience is trying to outsmart it. So you're not really enjoying it, or you're not really, you know, getting the point of what it's trying to do, even though you've seen this point be delivered before. But going back to Thatcher, like, I think the way she's able to express things in just simple, you know, physical gestures, or even like twitches in the face that are internally screaming, basically, is so compelling that it makes the movie worth recommending just on her performance alone. Even the way like she'll sit, or the way that she'll convey pain through, you know, being her hand being burnt. Like, it's like these little things that like add up to something that is just a really, you know, completely realized performance. And then the characters around her are less so. Like, I was hoping that Rupert Friend, who plays this Russian, you know, businessman, is a little bit maybe sketchy, or maybe not, would be a bigger part of it, because he is so funny in terms of his presentation, but also sleazy as well.
But he's just kind of a plot device, really.
Exactly, right? To get things going. And I'm kind of getting sick of seeing pocket knives in movies being strategically placed, because this is the third in like less than a month, with Flight Risk, this, and Bring Them Down. And so it's like when you, you know, when you see
Peter's pocket knife,
Peter's pocket knife. So when you see that, you know, with any object, with any Chekhov's, you know, blank put into it, you just feel like, okay, well, we know that this is going to present, you know, a new situation or conflict that's going to occur. We're just waiting for the device to either go off or be used in a way that will, you know, create a complicit situation.
To be fair, I guess it, I was surprised at how early it got to. That's why I think they've put it into the marketing, is because what they've shown in the marketing is pretty early in the movie. And I was surprised at how early we got to that, and that it wasn't saved for a bigger thing later. And then, yeah, the movie does have these twists that, you know, to be fair, some of them I saw coming, some I didn't. And, you know, I'm with you where it plays out in a fairly enjoyable manner. Is it saying anything new? Maybe not. Does it need to say anything new? Maybe not. Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid are enjoyable enough to kind of watch throughout the entire thing that it just kind of makes for a fun movie. And I do think that if you see it opening weekend with a big crowd, that will help a lot. Because part of me goes, this feels like a streaming movie to me. It's small budget. It's probably something you could throw on a Friday night and watch it with your partner and probably have a good time. But why it's going theatrically, and I think if people did avoid the marketing, or maybe only know the concept a little bit, or have seen the posters, and I think it is clever putting The Notebook and Barbarian in the kind of marketing, because that just kind of gives you an interesting vibe. I do think it will be fun with an audience that's unsuspecting.
To the point where the fan screening we were at, which was
was weird, dude.
They were like, filming people like the Warner Brothers people, the actual production team were filming reactions to the film. Like, they knew ahead of time what they were looking for and anticipating in terms of either you've seen it in reveals.
Yeah, you've seen this in movie marketing before where they have the infrared cameras and they're showing the audience, so it's got that kind of green, the
Buffalo Bill,
that kind of thing, where it shows the audience and they want people's like big reactions to the,
because it'll be in a TV spot or something, or because
they a lot of the marketing is going to be like, you won't see this coming, or you'll be shocked at whatever. And I don't know if anything in the movie deserves that big of a reaction, if I'm being completely honest.
But like, we're saying this because we see so many movies.
We're jaded. We are.
Where I think movie audiences might not expect certain things and react a certain way.
I totally agree. And I think a lot of people might go into this just going, oh, it's playing off like a rom-com, but then it ends up being hyper violent and surprising with twists all over the place. And I'm not saying it doesn't do that. I just think the recording of the audience thing, which was sort of distracting trying to watch it. And we will say Jack Quaid was at our screening afterwards. He showed up because he's shooting The Boys in Toronto. So that made sense as well. I will go back to your comment about the other human characters. Again, I'm at the who cares point of my life and career of like suspension of disbelief. It's a movie, so people have to act a certain way for it to be an entertaining movie. But everyone ironically acts not like a robot. Human. Yeah. Like no one acts like an actual human being in this movie, which, you know, in a lot of horror movies, that's a common trope, is everyone makes the dumbest decisions possible, or the way that they're reacting to things isn't how an actual person would react. So as the kind of plot is revealing itself and these other human characters get involved, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not how you would react to this happening. And I know we're in a universe where robots exist and they're lifelike and human and whatever, but it kind of, when it pulls you out of the movie, that's when I start thinking it's a valid criticism. And I felt throughout this, whenever something would happen and I go, that reaction doesn't feel authentic to me. Like that feels like it's written for a movie, or just is convenient how that person is reacting. That's when I start to go, I don't know if that completely works. And I did find myself throughout the entire movie sort of feeling that way. And mind you, most of the people involved are involved in this plot or whatever. A couple aren't, but the couple that are involved later, I'm like, come on, you wouldn't just be like, oh yeah, cool, that makes sense. And like, it's stuff like that. And just how
I will say one thing, like, it's not a spoiler, but I know exactly what you're saying. Okay. So there's a character, and I actually like her performance and she's quite good in the movie, is Megan Suri.
Yeah.
There's a moment where she takes another Valium, and I feel like in a situation that is escalating, you would not do that. You know, logically,
second Valium, maybe one Valium.
Well, the first time that it happens, yes, but then later on in the film, she does it again, and it's just because they're available, and you know, they make you feel relaxed and tired and good. But I think given what is going on later on, like you want to have your wits about you. You want to kind of be as sober as humanly possible, and I think any rational or logic person, given that predicament that they're in, wouldn't do that again. You know,
well, like I mean, and that's a small thing that I agree with you, but like they're even,
but they add up too, right? Like, but yeah, those things add up to the point where it's like, okay, well, why would this character do that? Or, you know, would they have to worry about those things? Or, you know, like really, I think this is another thing where like I'm starting to get tired of characters, like the joke being read the fine print. Like we get it. Like people don't read the fine print of things. And like, that's another part of it where it feels like it's the most obvious, but you know, going back to what you're saying before with, you know, we can predict it. We're not saying that we're smarter than the movie or we're smarter than audiences. I just think it's because we've seen those movies that we already referenced plus Barbarian. So there is a certain amount of expectation going in or thought process that feels like, okay, well, especially Barbarian had a twist that really kind of flipped the script and changed the dynamics and how things work. If they're really emphasizing the fact that part of the producing team is Barbarian based, you expect something's going to happen, right? And so when it does, then your mind starts to wander or starts to kind of like focus on, okay, well, they're probably going to do something else that will, you know, continue to change how we see things. And even its conversation about AI autonomy is interesting in the fact that, you know, you're rooting for Iris because Jack Quaid's Josh is so awful as a human being. But then you're also, what you're also supposed to think about is that, should you be rooting for AI to overtake humanity, even if it is a microcosm in this particular situation? And the fact that, you know, even though this guy's horrible, like, this could be the beginning of the end for humanity as a whole. Like, what's the next step in evolution? And all of these things have been covered so well in Ex Machina, you know, like in terms of the dynamic between those three parts. You know, I like Lucas Gage and I like Harvey Guillen well enough, but they just feel like extraneous characters, with the exception of Lucas Gage, who was really wonderful in How to Blow Up a Pipeline. And Smile 2, he was used very similarly as he is in this, you know, because his face is, you know, can go from zero.
He's good in White Lotus too.
Yeah. Can go to 0 to 10 in a second, expressively speaking as well. You get this feeling of like, oh, well, you know, like the characters are just there to maybe create a body count. You know, they're like, they're not there for anything else other than to be terrorized or to add an additional layer. Where, like, I love the fact that you had Donald Gleason and Oscar Isaac as basically the two leads, and then you had Alicia Vikander kind of being the person in between the two of them. You know, it wasn't a big cast. Like, it feels like they're bringing in more people because of this, and they don't spend a lot of time explaining the relationships between these characters, because that's the other thing as well that you were talking about. Like, you don't believe how people in this movie would behave or react in the real world if they were given this situation. Yeah. I also feel that these characters would never be friends in the real world. Like, none of these characters feel like people that would meet in the real world and become friends, or good enough friends to go away together on a weekend vacation in this isolated lake house. Like, they don't feel at all friendly, or like they know each other.
Even the little bit of history that we got from,
it just feels very written.
And that's kind of my biggest issue, mind you, still enjoyable. Same. Funny at times. Like, I do think the meet cute, how they play that into, you know, getting a companion robot and choosing your meet cute and then using that as a flashback and then a plot device later, I think is clever and fun. And I do think that there's some stuff there that is enjoyable. And mind you, at no point was I not having a good time or, you know, not, it's short, it's sweet, it's doesn't overstay its welcome. It's, again, maybe derivative a little bit, but then it's enjoyable to watch. So it is a good January movie. I'm not super high on it, but I'm not negative.
A January movie.
Yeah. It's just like, it's perfectly decent. And I do think that if you're looking for a date night movie on a weekend, like with a big crowd, because horror movies tend to do super well, that I think you will have a good time. Just don't overthink it, maybe. Just go in with a who cares mentality. Yes. and don't really, I doubt many people other than cinephiles and film critics that have watched everything and overanalyze shit will really care about a lot
inside,
of this stuff.
Let's be honest. Yeah. They're like robots themselves.
Yeah, exactly. They like, I feel like if you just go in with just shut off your brain and enjoy it kind of energy, I think you will enjoy it. I think if you're a big fan of Ex Machina or Westworld or anything that handles these topics, yeah, Morgan, Megan,
the Terminator, like, and the visual iconography of the film, like, it doesn't exceed its grasp, but there does feel like some of the actual VFX and augmentation are a little bit rough around the edges. The one joke that I did find very funny, and it's just basically, you know, like, it's not important to the movie, so I'm not ruining it, but they use the song Iris from the Goo Goo Dolls. That song was used in the soundtrack for City of Angels, which co-starred Meg Ryan, which
only you will know this,
which is Jack Quaid's son.
Yeah.
You know,
Jack Quaid's son. Yeah.
Sorry, Jack Quaid's mom. You know,
those are the types of things where I'm watching Pop Culture Jeopardy a lot. And yeah, me, you, and Nevis need to go on that show because I feel like we have a great mix of random bullshit knowledge from like all aspects of pop culture where I'm like, I feel like we could maybe do decent on that show because I bet you that could have been an intentional thing. Obviously the Iris thing is intentional because
Sophie yes, because the character's name. Yeah.
But the other thing, maybe
it Jimmy has Hancock to be, I Krieger, think they have to be,
but there is such a small percentage of people would put that together.
Know
that, yeah. Who would put that together, which I love.
I almost put it together, except saying that it was Jack Quaid's son. But it is, you know, it's intentional because they know it's intentional. I knew it was intentional when I heard it. Because it's like, there's no way that they were like, because no song is just thrown out randomly. It's like, oh, like, let's just put like this song that doesn't have a specific purpose in the film, except to say like, oh, they're playing a song that's called Iris. And it's as he is, starting up, uploading Iris. And that whole sequence actually is funny because it talks about like the paperwork and the awkwardness of like, you know, having a tech team come in and set this thing up, which is essentially, you know, they keep joking about it in a derogatory sense, going to be a sex bot. So, and there's even like a funny close up of an O face in the movie as well.
Smash cut.
Plays like a jump scare.
Yeah, it is. It's 1000% a jump scare. And it's a great like smash cut to Jack Quaid, just Jack Quaid's O face, which is just something.
If you've ever wanted to, if you've ever thought what Dennis Quaid or Randy Quaid's O face would look like, this is the closest you're getting to it.
God, see that in IMAX and it'll
see it in
scar
O-Max.
You. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Anything else? Cause I don't have much else to say. I think it's again, enjoyable watch. You could either watch it on a Friday, Saturday night at the movies or kind of wait until this is on Max
streaming
or Crave. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish it was maybe a little bit better than what it was, but ultimately, like, I think it's fine. I think it's a good first feature for a filmmaker where it doesn't require, you know, too many moving parts. It's one location. It's a small group of actors. It's pretty much self-contained. You know, it's about kind of showing off, like it's a great kind of calling card movie. And so for Drew Hancock to do this as his first film, like it is the perfect first movie for a director that way.
Totally,
you know, like I think it would work better as a short. Like I think it would have more of an impact as like a 20-minute short or a 10-minute short. But because we've seen all this other stuff, especially in the last decade, come out, I think that hurts it. And obviously the Terminator was in the 1980s, so you know, that's even before all that, and so we are bringing in all this additional, you know, baggage to the relationship that you have with science fiction and horror and that element. So I think maybe like the romantic angle is like the one aspect of it that is almost abandoned in the film once sort of the plot machinations start to be turned on.
And because that happens so quickly, that part does. I think it's just a way in for people, for sure.
Yeah, and I almost wish like it maybe leaned a little bit more into like the toxic relationship or the romance or the abuse that we have with technology itself. In trying to find like a new angle or a perspective on it. Like I really love that when Jack Quaid goes to the places he does, he has certain line deliveries that are very smug, like the way that he delivers the line processing. Like it's cheeky, obviously, but the way that, you know, he becomes pretty vile, it works and it's believable. And he kind of has both the boy next door kind of look to him, but also can be repugnant.
Big incel energy. Yeah. Too.
Huge, huge. And so like that all works. And, cinematography wise, like it looks okay, but there is this like weird Instagram filter glossiness on it as well that kind of feels cheap looking. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's fine. Like there's not a lot to say without getting into spoilers and really picking it apart and telling you like why this doesn't work or this doesn't feel authentic to a character choice. But I think it's like fine. Like for a January release, it's fine. It works. It's enjoyable. Like it's a pass. But like you were saying, you know, if you miss it theatrically and it's playing on whatever streaming service, whether it be Max or Crave or you know, what have you, you can watch it there and it'll still probably have the same effect.
Yeah, I'd agree. Maybe elevated a little bit by a big crowd, but that's pretty much it. Thank you all for listening. We really do appreciate it. If you're excited for 2025 in movies, you know, Companion didn't make our list because it was too early in the year, but we do have a list of 25 of the most anticipated films of 2025. It's a big 3-hour episode that Eric and I did where we kind of went through the entirety of 2025. So even if you don't care about what we're excited for, we did go over basically every single movie that might come out this year that has a release date or even does not have a release date. But then we do draft our 25 most anticipated films of the year, as well as look back at last year's list. We have a review up for Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man that you guys can check out. Eric did a one-on-one podcast with Suki and Lee for Paying For It, which you guys can listen to as well. So we have tons of stuff up right now. If you want that full 25 most anticipated list, but don't want to listen to the 3-hour podcast, it's over on Letterboxd, Entitled _ Movies, as well as all of our other content over there. You can follow both Eric and I at Matt Rorbeck and at EM6211, or just search our names over on Blue Sky or X or wherever the hell we are, Instagram and other places. Please go check out Eric's work over on rogerstv.com/cinemascene. He has new episodes of the show, new reviews, new interviews over there as well. I think that's all I want to plug. Did I miss anything, or that's good?
I think you plugged it all, Matt.
There's a lot. There's a lot coming up. We're
consistent.
We're actually doing a lot at the beginning of the year. So we did 6 hours of podcasting, 7 if you include Spider-Man, 7.5 for this, 8.5 if you include your Suki and Lee interview. So
we're
there's
regular
a lot.
Fellini, 8.5.
There's a lot out there. So hopefully you're not sick of us. But if you're listening to this, we really, really do appreciate it. Until next time.
You know, the other movie I thought a lot about was Her as well. And we need a new Spike Jonze movie.
God, it's been way too long. Was Her the last one?
Her was his last film.
Oh my God. That was before or just as Nevis and I started dating.
It was like 2013.
Yeah, that was when we started dating. I've been married and together for 10 plus years with my partner.
Like, have you figured out which one of you is the robot?
No comment. Bye, everybody.